In 2021, Talk About It Outdoors partnered with an industry-leading brand that has stamped its name on the outdoor industry. Cruiser Saddles, in itself, stands on perfection. And with every climb we make, we elevate ourselves above the rest. In addition to a support to our hunting journey, the men and women behind Cruiser believe in the same principles of life as us. Faith, family, and the blessings of being better as they go in every sit. If your desire to pursue your passions one step ahead of the rest, go ahead and get in the best. Check them out on all the socials or head over to their website at www.cruiser.com. That's CRUZR.com. And tell them to Talk About It Outdoors boys and Chasing Weekends sent you their way. The journey of life has a unique way of being able to create tried and true friendships as we go. In forming those relationships, oftentimes, good things come to follow. Talk About It Outdoors is proudly supported by Cal Hardy, the Barrelhead Land Company. Cal is the leading broker over Georgia and is happy to assist you with finding the place where you can call home. With vast knowledge and an understanding of the ever-evolving real estate market and a unique old-school approach to everything he does, he exemplifies what it means to treat others like you'd want to be treated. Don't settle for being just another number in a phone. Choose Cal Hardy for all your land, home, and commercial real estate needs and become a part of his family. We sure are blessed to have him as a part of ours. Find him on Facebook, Instagram, or give him a call at 770-296-2163. Step back to the times when a feed store was more than just that, and the people inside smiled with friendly faces and provided a place for a talk on life, as well as all your essential farm, livestock, and pet needs. Cherokee Feed and Seed, located in Ball Ground, Georgia, with an additional location in Gainesville, are the hometown supplier of all your cattle, equine, and pet needs, with the added addition of being able to keep your deer herd healthy with protein and minerals. They also carry an assortment of hunting blinds and gear, and you can rest easy knowing the people that support local ball clubs and children's sports are who your hard-earned money is going to. The people here greet you with a handshake and a smile, and Cherokee Feed and Seed give more than just a product. They give you a welcome that'll make you return time and time again. Stop in next time you're in the area and tell them you're part of the Talk About It Outdoors family. A few years back, when an overbearing and overgrown backyard became an eyesore, I looked for a solution to resolve. LRS Land Services created a stunning and complete transformation turnkey at an affordable price with their mulching services. Not limited to mulching, LRS can provide turnkey grading and clearing, maintenance, right-of-way clearing, and even development for any and all forestry needs. With an innovative outlook on what is best for your land and a completely different approach than others, LRS can transform your overgrown eyesore into a beautiful landscape of your dreams. Give them a call at 404-889-1105 or check their work out on Facebook at LRS Land Services. Logan and his team are ready to make your land brand new again. Building the foundation of your life starts at the base, and the stronger it is, the better. Talk About It Outdoors is proud of our strong partnership with United Concrete and Paving and the foundation of support they provide. Whether your new home being built needs concrete work or that driveway you're tired of beating all the bearings from your pickup needs a paving, Michael and his team can provide any residential or commercial project support you might need from the ground up. If you're tired of tripping over that unsettled patio slab or a future shop build needs a smooth start, United Concrete and Paving can get you going when you need it most. Give them a call at 404-831-3036 and make sure you tell them them TAI boys are where you heard it first.
Where are you from, Nick?
Canton.
Canton.
Walaska.
Did you hear us?
Great, everybody. Talk About It Outdoors coming to you live from the Cruiser Saddle Studio. It's part two of the return of the Talk About It Boys. And we got two of our newest members to Talk About It Outdoors coming in to talk about their recent success and maybe some failures that they've learned along the way. Y'all pull up a chair and sit a while. Travis and Josh are with us, and we're going to have a good time. What were you trying to tell me?
I was saying you didn't ask Nick if he was ready.
No, I asked him where he was from. That filled in for that. Canton. He's from Canton, Georgia. Dunner, you ain't from Canton. You grew up in Holly Springs.
Yeah.
But you're from the Springs.
Wildcat, baby. Through and through.
I'd like to see you. You got any? Did you play basketball?
I played for like 2 years. I got tired of running up down the court, and I gave it. My career was over after that.
You know, we had a basketball team in a men's league one time called the War Pigs. It was me, Brock Turner, Wade Mulkey, Too Tall. We all played together. Cody Bailey. I forget who all it was, and we were shooting foul shots. Mulkey was shooting these. Shot one, he told that ref he's drilling ball. He said, can I get a smoke break instead of a free shot or free throw? Guy's like, good God.
Basketball wasn't mine.
We went 500.
Really?
Yeah.
How long ago was that?
Oh, that would have been, when did I get Jericho? Me and Jessica started dating in 2006, so that would have been the summer of 2007, I guess, spring, summer 2007. We got the absolute hell beat out of us by a bunch of high school kids. The varsity men's, or I guess they was men, they might as well have been. They whooped us all with boys from Woodstock. Came and they were in that league as practice. Yeah. And we should have been in the B league. We was in the A league. And Chase Waters, he played with us. It was fun. Marvin, Too Tall's daddy, he'd come to every game. Too tall, deep plank, feed him that rock every time. It was fun. We went 500. We beat a team of Chinese boys. I was going to say Chinaman, but I might think it might not have been proper English.
Well, I would have cut that out. I guess that depends on where they're actually from.
Their team was called the Chinaman.
Well, then you beat the Chinaman.
Yeah, so. It was.
I mean,
they was good. One of them, his family owns laundromats around Woodstock, mm-hmm. and he and I actually became Facebook friends. And that Travis got tickled at that. I don't know. Is that racist? Damn,
not when their jersey says it.
No, it didn't say it. They just wore white T-shirts.
Where'd the name come? Was that what was actually on the schedule?
Their team name was the Chinaman.
Okay, that's what they're.
Bruce's guy's name, Lee, Bruce Lee.
No, it wasn't.
No, I think his name's actually Akins. Bruce Akins is his name for real. Really? So shout out, Bruce, if you listen to this. I ain't talked to you in a long time. Yeah,
sure, he's too dead. Was there an Indian team in the league, too, that owned a bunch of gas stations?
No.
Whoa,
no.
Travis.
I have a funny story about that from when I was young.
Well, go ahead and tell it while we're rolling this
the
thing.
The gas
up.
Stations?
So I also played basketball a lot growing up. I played for Etowah. And in my spring and summer seasons, I would go play rec ball just to keep playing. And there was a year that I was playing with a team that most of the guys on my team were beginners, and it was really just fun for me. And so my one of my best friends was sitting on the sideline with a kid from another team, and they were talking about different kids in the league that were pretty good. And the kid goes, that Puerto Rican kid's pretty good. And there was a kid on my team who was Indian.
Uh-huh.
And so my friend was like, are you talking about that guy? And he was like,
dead
never
serious.
Played before. And he was like, no, not that. Not the Indian kid. The Puerto Rican kid.
He's talking about you.
And my friend just died. He was like, he's not Puerto Rican.
So what grade in elementary school did you start shaving?
Third.
It had to be. You've had a beard since I've known you.
Oh, well, I mean, I was 27 when you knew me. But
yeah.
Well,
that's true.
I started getting a mustache when I was in sixth grade.
How about you, Nick?
It took a while for mine to come on.
I'm still trying. I'm 37.
Yeah, it took a while for mine. Like, mine was.
It's the thickest my beard ever, probably facial hair's ever been.
It looks good, buddy.
Mine was long after high school. But once it came, it didn't stop growing. It's went from, I mean, I got hair from
toenails to your top of your head.
Yeah.
Mine started growing up to my eyes. So I can just about look like Wolfman. Wolfman and Donna.
That's his dad, you know.
I still got a video.
Do you? Yeah.
It's actually on my computer, I think.
His dad does look just like
Wolfman. Yeah, I saw the turkey video where that was the first time I'd ever seen your dad.
Him and Donna.
Yeah.
I'm talking about Jack. It's funny how you spend time with your family and you get to experience things and get to learn things. And I've never seen a more representation of that than I did this year when we went to Iowa and the stories that we got to tell. And I never thought I'd hear people talk about how hard it is to go to the bathroom with all the clothes on as it is. And the older you get, the harder it is. And my dad and Uncle Reuben, they had a 45-minute conversation about, I couldn't get it out. I just try hard to get that fly open. And then Uncle Reuben was talking about, you ever used any of them Duluth Trading Company underwear? Boy, they're terrible to get it out of. You got to go left, right, left. He said, it's like getting it out of a maze. So it was the older you get, the funny things that you hear older folks talk about. So. And we'll touch on that for a little bit. You know, we just got back from Iowa. Great trip again. Probably the least meat we've brought back from up there. I think we counted up. It was about 95 pounds of meat. We usually knock down quite a few does up there. And I think EHD has hit quite hard up there. We didn't see the deer. Something was going on. I can't say it was EHD, blue tongue, green tongue, whatever it might be. But something found 7 dead deer on the property we were hunting. And it just wasn't the year that we normally have. You know, we usually see some mature deer, and we didn't. Jesse Brunson, we've got his horns laying here on the table. We got to take it and get it mounted for him. We got
that's a lot of bone,
there, thick bone. So shout out to him and all the boys. It was a great time. We had a great year. Gary, I got to, and I don't know if Gary listens to the podcast or not, but he had told us that this would probably be his last year hunting with us. It was probably, I guess, a long time coming, but it was funny. I said, Gary, why did you stop hunting with those guys that you hunted with in Southern Iowa? Cause he'd been hunting for a long time, 45 years. I think he said he had hunted and this was going to be his last year. And he said, it got to be where them fellas cared more about drinking than they did about hunting. And I thought, and you picked us to start hunting with. He thought that was the funniest thing in the world. But Gary's become a really good friend, and he's getting on up there in age. I think he's 78 years old now. And but that joker, he don't miss a beat. He'd get up and go to his blind. I'd hear him coming in on the fuller in the mornings, and I'd hear him over there on the phone. We were sitting about 100 yards apart, and he was watching one big draw, and I was watching another. And he was sitting there, and he'd get on the phone, and hello! I'd hear him all the way over where I was at, and he'd talk just so loud. And I just sat there and grinned, you know, and a younger me might have let that bother him, but I've just kind of, you know, I was like, one of these days I'm going to look over on that hill. So if I'm lucky enough to come back, you know, in years to come, and old Gary won't be sitting there no more. So I got to thinking about that and just enjoyed the trip. And we had a great time. We ate good. We, you know, knocked down a few does. And that was really it for this year. There's not a whole lot of excitement to tell other than that.
Anything changed from years past?
No deer.
Just the deer?
Yeah.
Just the deer numbers?
Yeah, numbers were definitely down.
You think it's akin to kind of what we saw when we went up to Illinois in the beginning of the year?
No, not really. I mean, I feel like, you know, I saw a lot of deer in Illinois. I mean, no less than I normally did. But for me to watch the fields that I watch and just driving around, we didn't see the deer. You know, certain areas had a lot of deer that we'd drive through, but just didn't see a lot of deer this year I mean, learn some stuff. definitely learn some stuff this year up there, but it was definitely a year that will never be forgotten. I'll say that. But it was one that was real special. So
how was the weather?
Cold, like you 20s and 30s. It wasn't just bitter cold like usual. Last year, I think opening day, it was 4 degrees with a negative 10 degree wind chill. I did take a pop-up blind in a heater this year, and I was hunting that saddle last year, and I told Nick, I was like, I ain't doing that again. Ain't no way. I like froze to death last year. Had me a heater, and it's that space heater sitting there in the floor, and that son of a gun would whistle. Mm-hmm. And then go off. Finally, I just turned it off. I was like, I can't hear it no more, and I can't stand that. Now, you can heat an oatmeal pie up on there. Now, you can't lay that oatmeal pie on the grate like a marshmallow. It'll melt right through, and then half your pie's in there burning. And then you turn it back. You turn it off, turn it back on. It smells like a bakery, and you're blind. So.
Is water scarce up there?
Not as far as creeks and stuff? There's no creeks. I mean, creeks are just something you don't see a whole lot of. I mean, there's a few running through, but there's a big lake on the farm that we hunt, and there's a small pond. A lot of ponds up there. You see a ton of ponds.
What feeds them, mostly underground springs?
Springs. And, I mean, there's some creeks that come in. You get down around the rivers and stuff, I mean, but most of it's spring-fed.
A lot of farmland. I mean, farmland, another farmland. Is there a lot of, like, cattle and stuff around there?
There's quite a bit right there where we're at, yeah. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of cattle. And the cattle market, the bottoms fell out of it all of a sudden here. I mean, it was high as it's been in a long time in the last few months, and now the bottom of it's kind of falling out. So.
Does that EHD transfer to those cattle?
Uh-uh.
It don't?
No.
Gotcha.
It's kind of like mad cow disease can't transfer to a deer. Hmm. So.
Can rabbits and squirrels get that EHD?
Mm-mm. No, just it's deer. Only been tracked in deer.
Huh.
Yep. They've got different diseases that have attached to most rodents. Well, small game, call them rodents, whatever you want, tree rats. They're not as susceptible to the diseases that herd animals are because they are solitary animals. They don't herd up. Most herd animals, chickens, cows, pigs, things of that nature is what gets your big transferable diseases. Mm. Because it can go, it can bounce carrier to carrier to carrier to carrier to carrier.
Do you think that affected all the places of hunting up there? Was the shots, you hear less shots this year?
At least I'd heard that. I don't think there's as many hunters, you know, out and about as there once was up there. I don't feel like there was. Not on private ground anyway.
I think people's kind of geared more to chasing the big deer and getting away from the
driving and everything.
Driving, shotgun hunting.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's as... A lot of leased ground, a lot of ground going by the wayside and kind of getting away from that whole, you know, deer drives and things of that nature. And we heard a lot of shots, but not first year I went up there, man, I bet I heard 300 shots opening morning, maybe a dozen.
Can you not bow hunt in the gun season up there?
Uh-uh, not in Iowa.
Because, you know, we just had Jared on the podcast a couple episodes back, but, you know, like he says on his show all the time, he's like, I'm going to put my bow down until the gun hunts are over. So I was just curious if... I guess it's kind of a time. I guess they don't even want to get out and gun hunt.
They don't want to get out in, because you can in Illinois bow hunt during the gun season now.
Certain gun seasons.
First gun season you can.
You can in the first gun season now?
Because they passed that last year. This has been the first year that you could do it. And maybe even last year. So you can bow hunt during that, because I know Brock was talking about you. But you have to have a shotgun tag. You have to have a tag for the season you're hunting in. You could take a deer with your shotgun tag. So if you buy one for second season, you can't use your bow tag during that season.
Correct. Right? Gotcha.
Yeah, but you can take a deer with that. But you can't even bow hunt at all during.
I don't understand that. Like, why can you not bow hunt during a gun?
Dude, it's again. it is. That is one thing about being up there is all the states are so, they have these little nuances to them, and there's a lot of confusion about what tag you're buying for what season. You know what I mean? Like, especially for somebody that hasn't gotten into it at all. So like when you guys texted me the other day, I freaked out. I was like, dang, did I just come up here for no reason?
I thought the same thing when you said that.
Yeah. And, but you know,
that would have sucked.
There's like Illinois season is confusing, and, you start looking at the way the draws and stuff are out west, or like, you know, they're all just a little bit different. And
it is.
So it can be a lot to try to
You notice that when you apply for turkeys too. I mean, so to me, it's like they'll be when you apply, like let's say Illinois, and again, I'm not, this may not be the truth, but this is kind of similar how it is. Is like their date may be, you might apply for this tag for March 1st to March 5th. Well, then you apply for March 6th through March 8th. You know what I'm saying? Like, why not just leave the season open and just let people draw? I mean, I get they probably break it up, but why not just leave the season open?
I don't
open?
Know. Maybe it creates additional opportunity, you know?
Well, it generates more revenue. I mean, of course.
That's the big thing is, like, if I buy, like, as an out-of-stater, I'm not going to buy a shotgun tag and an archery tag. That's almost $1,000.
Yeah. There are people that, like, do, though.
There are people that do. And more power to them if they've got that kind of discretionary income, you know. But, like, for me, I just don't – I don't see paying $1,000 to buy no. both tags, you know. And then on top of that, there's rules on how many – even if you buy – both tags, how many bucks you can actually tag. You know what I mean? So yeah. Easier for me to just buy the one tag and make sure I'm there during the season.
Exactly. Now that they did open it up to that, I didn't know that though. But still doesn't matter unless you have that shotgun tag.
Exactly.
You have to have the...
But you can hunt in later gun hunts with your bow tag.
I don't know.
No. So when you actually look at the season on the, like, in Illinois specifically, the season closes, the archery season closes for those specific amounts of time. So when you actually look it up, it'll tell you the season is from this date to this date, and then it closes, and then it's from this date to this date. In between that is when you see those shotgun seasons.
Gotcha.
So.
But what was you saying earlier that you could hunt during the muzzleloader?
Yeah, so the muzzleloader season and the archery season, they coincide.
Okay.
So that was, like, you guys sent that text message, and I knew the firearm season had been the previous weekend.
Yeah.
And so I was like, it triggered in my head that it was muzzleloader season, and then I thought, well, I don't know if I'm allowed to hunt or not.
Yeah.
And so when I got there, I did my research before I actually went out and went hunting.
Well, let's go into your story because you...
Well, hold on. Before we go into Josh's, because I want to rewind a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
And talk about the first trip to Illinois.
What's that noise? Can you hear that?
It might be my chair.
That? It's my headphones moving, but... So what do you think, Mick?
It sounds like you're taking your zipper up and down.
It was. It was hitting that zipper right there.
It's hitting that zipper on his vest.
I guess.
Yeah, it is about to again. You remember we had that trouble with that one guy?
Your lapel mic was going on. That one guy. What was that guy?
Was that the Deer Society?
Still doing it. Now you got me hearing that.
No, it's not doing it.
It's not doing it.
Oh, I don't know where I was going.
We're going back up to Travis to get his
first Illinois trip.
The backtrack to Illinois 1, 2023, first timer, newcomer to talk about it outdoors. I'm gonna beat him up for a minute right here. Did not know how Travis was going to do around us, and he did well in the grand scheme of it. He learned very well. But I don't think Travis knew what to expect getting in camp with us. He didn't know how to take us at times, I think. But in the end, I think he realized that it was all in good fun. And I asked him, what was it, the last night or pretty close there to the last night, I asked you, what have you learned most in about camp? And what was your answer?
Shoot, you're going to have to tell me.
Well, everyone has a job to do in camp.
he texts me when you guys, I guess, were on the way up there. He said, I've never heard so many gay jokes in my life.
Who said they were jokes?
Yeah. Oh, we had those walkie-talkies, and Travis finally got out of range, and I bet his ears was just burning.
He doesn't know is I was laughing my butt off the whole time, and I was like, it'll be funny if I just don't say a word.
Yeah.
It was good stuff. We had a great time traveling up there, and I knew going into what we were going to face as far as the area I was sending Travis into, and I say we because I felt like it was kind of a team effort when we started into it, and you were the one that had to go and do all the work, but I knew that if there was anybody in our group that could tackle this place and would take it headstrong and go wide open at it, it was going to be Travis. And, well, Tell us a little bit about it. I mean, just kind of go into, you know, where were you hunting at? You were hunting on public land. You were hunting in an area that's pretty hard to access. And was it as hard as you maybe had in your mind before you got there?
Well, the area he's talking about, there's a lake in between where you want to go.
Travis.
Where you start.
Get a little closer.
There's a lake in between where where you want to hunt and where your truck is. So he knows that I'm a kayaker, and he said, you know, bring your paddleboard because you're going to have to get in there the hard way. And I was like imagining this giant lake, and I got there and I was like, man, that's a little tiny lake right there. And Alex is like, man, you wear your life jacket. And I get there and it's like 200 yards. So not that bad for me. The deer hunting part's where I lack skills. Right. So I'm able to get over there. I pull the paddleboard up, and the first thing I see, there's just thousands of tracks on the edge of this lake. I put my hand down. These tracks are wider than my whole fist, and I'm like, oh my God, like this is the mother load. So I go up this little ridge, and there's persimmon trees everywhere, and I'm like, God, is this going to happen, like, on the first sit? Like, this place looks amazing. So sit there, first day, don't see a deer. So it wasn't as hard, to answer your question. Right. It wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be to get there.
Mm-hmm. It looked like a daunting task to somebody that doesn't know kayaking, right. Doesn't know, you know, that face some of the stuff that you've done.
Yeah, I wouldn't exactly.
No.
That's what attracts me to places like that, is the prospect of getting somewhere where there's unpressured deer.
Right.
Because, like I said, my deer hunting skills are probably, you know, down here where, like, I can climb and kayak and all that, mm-hmm. and get to places. So I kind of seek those places out.
Right.
But, you know, I think you and I were texting on your way up, Travis, and you said, I had to stop by Academy. I kind of pulled off from the guys to get a pump for my paddleboard. And I'm the whole time, and I guess it's my fault, but when I think of paddleboard, I think of the hard paddleboard, like a surfboard that you see that people at the ocean that come down, come stay 60 yards off the shore and paddleboard down the ocean. And I'm like, what the heck is he going to do with that float? But this is inflatable. Like, you have to actually blow it up, right?
Uh-huh.
So yep. Do you have the, and I'm going to refer to Do-It-Yourself Hunter on YouTube. Do you have the one that it basically looks like a float and you pump air?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen that one. He's got the foot pedal.
Yeah.
And he can pump it up.
Yeah.
So I've got one that's it's a big tube, and you put two hands on it, and you just use.
It's like you're blowing up dynamite.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So when this thing, and I think Cody kind of said this earlier, but when this thing blows up to full capacity of air, it's like canvas, like real hard material.
It's not, like 12 to 15 PSI. So when it feels like wood, like it's hard as a rock.
Okay.
You can drive your truck over.
You're not worried about setting your sticks on it, your bow, all this stuff to puncture it.
No. I mean, you'd have
this to. This ain't a Dollar General float you got out here in the swimming pool. It ain't hot. Yeah. You'd have to throw a shot. I think you could shoot a bow at it and it might bounce off. It's stuff is hard.
Yeah, it's tough.
So when you did paddleboard across this, would you drag it up in the woods or would you tie it out? How would you?
Yeah, I was a little afraid because there was trucks coming by all the time. And I was like, man, I don't want them to see where I'm at. So I'd pull it up on the shore and kind of hide it behind a bush. And I'd throw my paddleboard and my paddle behind a bush.
Okay.
Big ass bush, as big as that paddleboard is too. Yeah. I was thinking small, you know, maybe 6-8 foot. And what does that thing measure?
It's like a 12-6, and it's got like a 400-pound weight capacity.
12 foot long, 6 foot wide.
12 foot 6 inches long, and probably 36 inches wide.
And you just, how do you get on that from the water?
I kind of just step on it. Because I spent 4 years paddleboarding the Chattahoochee.
12 foot long.
I know, but I'm talking about side to side. Well, yeah, that's pretty good balance.
He's pretty agile. Yeah.
That's pretty good balance.
Yeah.
3 foot's pretty wide. Well, I mean,
you know how it is stepping in a John boat.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that thing's probably more rigid and stable than a John boat is because it's flat surface area, right?
Yeah, and once you paddleboard for a while, your legs get used to it, and you actually want it to wobble, and then your legs will go with it, and your hips just kind of stay centered. And you just get used to it. So I'll just step on it, put my bow and my backpack down. And then most of the time I'll either sit down or paddle on my knees. And but if it's real calm, you can stand up and paddle.
Didn't you see some guys fishing one morning?
Oh yeah, that was at the second lake. I went to several.
They knew Cody,
lakes.
Right? Didn't they know Cody?
Oh shoot, yeah. I thought so. I was talking to this old timer, and he must have been 80. Had like a U.S. Army hat on, and I was just shooting the breeze with him, and he was like, "Yeah, this old salt and pepper fellow came up and asked me if he could hunt my land the other day," and I was like, "Was his name Cody?" He just started laughing. He said, I'm bad with names, but that was probably him.
That's funny.
Wasn't he at the bar?
I don't know.
So you got back, yeah. You got back in there and you sent me a, Travis, I don't know how long it took you to get in that tree and get set up, but I mean, it basically looked like you took Cabela's up there on the top of that tree with you. So how long did it take you to get set up?
Well, I sat on the outskirts the first couple of days and I said, screw it. I'm going in because I wasn't seeing any deer. And I started hiking in there, and I was seeing sign everywhere, and it looked like, I was seeing scrape after scrape. So I went in there third day, I think midday, and found this tree. There's no trees. I mean, it's a beautiful, ridge with
it's basically all flooded grass. Timber they had logged at some point and left a few trees in there.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, it looked like somebody had went and mowed this field and it had grown up. It just looked perfect. But there was nowhere to set up. The only tree that I could think of setting up in was, it was like 6 feet around.
Yeah.
Can't get your platform around it. You could never climb it traditionally. So I just took, I didn't have my throw ball. So I just took my Nalgene and a piece of rope and threw it as high as I could get it and pulled my rope up about 25 foot. And I started climbing and I got to 25 foot and I still couldn't get my platform around that tree. But I was just sitting there looking around. It took me two and a half hours to figure out,
golly,
like, where the heck am I going to sit? Cause I would get on this branch and then I'd move over to the other side. Can I get on this branch and sit here? And I had two beautiful looking fields with some brush in between, brush at my back. And I was like, man, I really like this tree. I just can't get my platform set up. So I finally texted guys and I was like, man, I can't get in this tree. This ain't going to work. And I don't know who
it was me.
Somebody said, make it work. And I was like, what? So I'm just sitting there hanging in my harness and my cruiser saddle, like, I guess I'll make it work. So I just straddled a big branch, unhooked my tether. I don't recommend this for anybody. And then threw my rope up like another 20 foot.
And good Lord.
And somehow.
Are you getting frustrated at this point?
No, it's like a puzzle.
Okay.
It's like part of the
fun. Yeah, you feed off of this challenge.
Yeah. He's a rock climber.
Yeah.
I'm a rock climber.
You know, I don't think it was me. I think it was Josh Townsend actually is the one that said make it work.
He said make it work. Yeah. Because I sent a picture of the two fields and they looked beautiful. And I was only 25 foot up at that point. And he said, make it work. And I looked up and I saw that crotch, up in the tree. And I was like, I bet that would work up there. And yeah, Chad would probably appreciate this because he rock climbed. That's mm-hmm. That's kind of how he formed Cruiser Saddles.
Yep.
I was like, man, I trust this saddle. Like I can get up there. I finally made it up and I had to make a, Chad will know what I'm talking about. I had to make a boulder move where basically I couldn't get up any higher with my rope and I had an ascender. So I had to grab like the crotch of the tree and basically hack my foot up as high as I could. And I had to pull myself up above where my rope was tied around the tree and do a little boulder move. And then I had to, once I got up in the crotch and I felt safe, I unhooked again and then hooked my tether up higher over my head. And then I knew I was safe and then I could start pulling up my gear.
When you listen to this back, I want you to understand why I was nervous not hearing from you when you're on the ground and stuff. That's one thing I told him. I was like, for that one night, he didn't text or call or anything. Then he got back to camp. I was like, look, dude, I don't care what you do. When you get on the ground, you need to text me. Because we was worried. And I mean, it's just because we care, We didn't want to.
Yeah.
you know, well, anybody to get hurt.
I forgot
but,
to tell you, I've got a second tether that I use for safety. So, if
well,
I'm,
no, I mean it does yeah. that. You know, any of that stuff. But I would just that's why it makes me my hands are sweating sitting here listening to yeah. talk about. But it's well,
so you're a good 40 foot up in that tree.
Yeah, it had to been 35 to 40, and but the good part was once I got up there, I looked out and. And the two shooting lanes were, you know, they were going uphill. So the angle wasn't as bad as if, you know.
If it was a 40-acre field and you were sitting right in the middle of it yeah, in the top of this
yeah,
tree.
Yeah, if it was a yeah. flat field.
You could shoot 400 yards from there.
It had been too high of an angle for a bow shot.
Gotcha.
Now, so. What day did you – so it, the idea of you going into this spot was it was secluded – and a giant probably lived in there. You found sign. You found
yep.
the sign of deer being in there.
Yep.
Probably, do you think, and I'm going to ask this before we go into the success and failure kind of side of it, but mm-hmm. do you think the weather had been different that you would have saw more deer in that area?
I had never been up there.
Right.
I thought the weather was kind of, you know, it was pretty cold the first few days. So I thought, man, this is
it was cool.
Weather.
I mean, that was never cold. I mean, for up there, yeah. we want, you know, like 20s to high teens, 20s. I mean, getting cold weather up there.
Yeah.
But I see what you're saying. I mean,
possibly, you know, the one limiting factor is I never saw a doe in that spot. And,
yeah.
And I don't know that the rut was even starting at that point, but I wished I would have seen more does. And if it would have been cooler, maybe it, you know,
sparked them up, made them get in those areas.
Yeah.
So what day did you see the buck, you saw a buck on?
I believe it was on Sunday. So we got there Friday, mm-hmm. and then I hunted Friday, Saturday morning, didn't see anything. Saturday afternoons when I got in, you know, my setup mm-hmm. in there, and I saw, I didn't see any deer that whole afternoon, sit until the very last light, and I saw a pretty big 6-point.
Yeah.
Heavy horn 6-point, but he's still inside his ear, so I let him pass. He came within 10 yards. But that I text Shaw, I was like, ooh, this is good right here. Like, I could have smoked that deer. So I was, like, really feeling good about the spot. And then so came back to camp, and I was, like, going in the next morning, like, ooh, this is it right here. Like, it's a good weather day. So I believe it was Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, 30 minutes after first light is when that, you know, I was getting a little cold, a little bored. I start looking down my phone, and I was like, no, pay attention. So I look over to my left, and there's a, you know, just standing right there, just big, tall, like mainframe 8 with a split G2 on the right side. And I'm like, holy shit. Like, I've never seen a deer that big in Georgia. So yeah. My heart just starts just pumping out of my chest. And I'm like, oh my God, cameras, like turn the cameras on. Well, my GoPro was already on. It was already filming. So I reach up there and turn it on, and I turn it off. So I missed the whole shebang on the GoPro. I did get some good footage on the big camera.
You did, yep.
And, you know, I learned this after the fact, but I had a lot more time than I thought. And Nick texted me this, and, you know, that deer was just grazing.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't
in a hurry.
Fast. Yeah. He was standing. He'd graze. He'd pick his head up, look around a little bit while he's chewing. And he'd put his head back down. He'd take a step, you know. And the whole time, it may have seemed like he was slow,
but it seems like it's just, yeah. He's a, oh my God, oh my God.
In the moment, I thought it seemed like it lasted 30 seconds, but then I've got like 3 or 4 minutes of footage. Mm-hmm. And he was probably standing there 2 minutes before I even noticed him standing there. So, but you want me to go ahead into what happened next?
Yeah, what happened?
So I, my camera wasn't set just right. So I had to put the camera as far as I could out to the right. And, you know, it barely caught him in the frame, but it was on him. And I could see it on the LCD screen. Kind of like Jared, I want to get it on film. I know I probably should have just focused on the deer hunting, but I like that filming aspect.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I really focused on that, and I tried to breathe, grab my bow, and I had to step into the second crotch of the tree that was like 3 feet away. And I had two tethers on, and so I could lean one way and be on one tether and lean another way and be on the other tether. So, but it was perfect. I stepped up in that second crotch. I pulled back. I was right behind his shoulder. He stepped broadside, picks his head up, just perfect. And I think when he pulled his head up and I saw those antlers, I don't know if I freaked out or what, but I started to pull back on my release. And I think I just, oh, this is my chance right here. And I think I just punched it a little bit. And another thing, so the arrow, it goes right under the deer, sticks in the ground right at his feet. He didn't even move until the arrow hit the ground. So, I mean, he was completely calm. And this is all the stuff I learned after the fact from talking to you guys. And, man, it's going to haunt me because one big mistake that I made is I didn't range the deer. I had ranged that spot the day before. And I had it in my mind, 25 yards. That's 25 yards. Well, it was 35 yards. So, took the shot, went under him. He ran, you know, 10, 15 yards, looked back. And I don't think he even knew what happened. Mm-hmm. So, I grunted at him, try to make him think it was another deer or something that in the brush. But, you know, he had had enough, so he was gone. But I ranged that spot right after, and it's like, that was 35 yards. Like I rushed it.
And probably what we've talked about is a common problem. And I have done this myself, is looking for the arrow. You're getting that bow out of the way and wanting to know where it hit at. And you probably dropped your hand, you know, and inevitably uh-huh. caused the shot to fall low in itself when you push down, instead of watching for that shot. And goes back to form practice, you know, mm-hmm. watching that arrow hit the target before you move your hand. And in the moment like that, though, I mean, like you said, that's the biggest deer you've ever had in front of you. I mean, yep. it's a hard thing to
face. You can't
practice
for the, you can't practice for those moments.
You cannot
there's
practice.
There's no way.
You can practice for the shot, but you can't practice that yeah. adrenaline rush.
You can't go out there. You can go, I don't care how many times you go in your yard and set up different targets. You're never going to have that feeling that you had right there when yeah. that buck was standing there. The only thing you can think of is that buck's getting out here and I got to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
the only thing your mind's telling you.
I think even in those perfect scenarios like that, that even myself, that deer, when I'm at full draw, that deer's getting away. I got to send it, you know, yeah. even, you know, knowing that the deer's calm and everything else, he's getting away. Mm-hmm. I got to do it now. He's about to bolt.
But that was kind of the question back on the Jared Mills episode that me and Mark Tucker were talking about that I asked Jared is, like, do you think that camera actually helps you slow down, get it in frame, take your time, you know, because you're not rushing at that point. But, again, we're not there for, you know, we get a week to hunt. So, mm-hmm. you know, we got, again, that's probably processing in the back of our mind too. But, I mean, man, you can't do nothing. All you can do is try to shake it off the best you can in several months mm-hmm. And get back up there and get one. And then when you'll have that memory forever of that deer.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, and I said it on the podcast too, is the thing that you texted me and said,
mm-hmm.
you know, you said, I'm in the right spot. I'm yeah. not disappointed. I had the opportunity yeah. and here I am.
And that's what you got to go on, is you're looking for an opportunity.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Alex said before we went up there, is like, I think Travis is going to get a shot, not at a giant, but at probably the biggest deer he's ever seen. And I had the chance. That's yeah. all you can ask for is the chance.
You give somebody an opportunity. I can't kill the deer for you. I can't, you know, yeah. I can say, hey, you can go here. And
yeah,
I mean, that's.
You put me in the right spot.
Oh, dude, I, and for me, I didn't look at it as. You know, I'm sure you were disappointed in it, but I felt like it was almost a success in a way that you were there. Oh. You were in that moment. You had the opportunity. You had that deer, you know, yeah. dead to rights.
Yeah.
Everything didn't come together on it, but think about what you learned out of that, you know, just out of yeah. those few days that you got to hunt that area. You got to hunt a different spot. And I think it goes into, you know, some of the thought process that we're putting into the future, you know, into mm-hmm. 2024, what we're going to do and what we're going to try. And there's going to be some very interesting conversations that come up this summer, I think. You were talking earlier about wanting to, you know, kind of start spinning up for 24. And I don't even want to start talking it yet because this season's not over. And then we've got turkey season that we're going to focus hard yeah. on. But I really, really think that, and I meant what I said on that, after watching you hunt that week and watching you learn to clean your damn coffee grains up and learn, but, you know, camp and things like that. But what you learned in hunting, you know, whether you learned it from Cody or me or Josh or anybody that was in camp in those conversations, you take that and you apply that going into next year. And what you learned in your own struggles or in your own, you know, triumphs, mm-hmm. you brought it back to Georgia and you knocked down, you know, was that your first deer with the bow?
No, I killed maybe three deer with my bow before. And, okay. But I hadn't killed one in 2 years.
Right.
So, you know, last year was a bunch of close calls mm-hmm. and, you know, we just needed some deer meat. We didn't have any deer meat, so I was going to shoot anything brown at this point. But I went over to a little permission piece, and first time I'd hunted it this year,
right.
I'd had a camera over there all year and had a real nice 8-point with a split G2, and, you know, was hoping he'd show up, but I was ready to shoot anything. And, you know, a bunch of does showed up at 3:30 in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon, one weekend, and started blowing all around me. She went in the front, came back to the side. She circled around me, and I just remembered that, you know, rushing that shot, because I was getting a little adrenaline pumping just on a doe, but it wasn't as bad as that buck. But I just remembered, you know, take your time on the shot, make sure you're set where you need to be set, and slowly release, like, don't grip the bow too hard. You know, all that stuff's going through my mind, and I made a, you know, the best shot I've ever made on a deer with my bow. Mm-hmm.
But so that goes back to that form practice. You know, mm-hmm. you're playing those scenario out in your head. You're able to process that and say, I need to do this. And you go through that over and over and over again in your mind.
Yeah.
And so, you want to talk about boulder room in one. He reports that one. Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask the, go ahead.
No, I was just going to, that backing up to that spot you had in Illinois, did you run into anyone?
Yeah, so, you know, after that day, that was a Sunday, you know, it was real early in the week, and I did come back and hunt that spot Thursday and Friday. You know, I let it sit for, I think I hunted all day Monday, and I didn't see a deer till the last day. It was that same 6-pointer about 100 yards off, and then I let it sit on the bad weather days and went and found some other spots where I had some close encounters. But then I came back Thursday and Friday. Thursday, sat all day, same thing, saw that 6-pointer last light. Friday, last day, went in there. It was a good weather day. I was excited and walked in there, and I see this red light, and I'm like, is that like a tower way off? No, somebody's headlamp. Dang, red light. It is a new hunter. There's two trucks parked at the you know, right across from this ditch that I didn't think was passable. And I talked to the guy, and he's like, yeah, it's our first day in here. And I was like, well, I'm set up right there in that tree. And I pointed right at it, and we're, you know, 50 yards from it. And I was like, I've been hunting in here all week. And, you know, I was like, it's public land. You can do whatever you want to do, but that's where I'm hunting right there. He goes, well, I'll just push in here a little bit further. And I thought he was just going to go on south about, you know, 200-300 yards. Well, he ends up looping around and comes, you know,
just realizes there's nowhere to go.
Yeah, nowhere to go. In the dark with his headlamp, like, just making all sorts of noise, you know, light just shining everywhere. And it's already past, you know, legal shooting time. And this guy's like 45 minutes into legal shooting time, still trying to find a spot. He ends up setting up like 50 yards from me. So I was texting everybody, letting everybody know what's going on. And I was like, I'm about to rattle as loud as I can, as long as I can. So I as soon as he got set up, I just let her rip, just making as much noise as I could. And, but I got down about 10, and on the way out, like, I was going to go grab my camera on that trail I've been using all week. And I walked under another guy. He's sitting there. And I'm like, sorry, bud, you weren't here when I walked in this morning. I walked the same trail. So I was like, let me grab my camera. Sorry for ruining your hunt. So there's two guys in there on the last day.
Yeah.
But I had it to myself all week.
Why do you think there wasn't more deer in there?
I don't know. Maybe it was food. You know, a lot of the guys that were seeing a lot of deer were over there on those ag fields, and – you know, I didn't know what they were eating. There's a lot of persimmons around, but I never saw any deer eating persimmons. There weren't any oaks. Well, there's a couple of oaks, but I didn't see that they were eating on those. And, you know, the fields were, it looked like grass. I didn't see any like clover or anything. I wasn't familiar with any of the food up there. So
the idea of that place and that spot is not to see a lot of deer.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, you're not going into that spot to see, you're going in there to see the deer.
Yeah.
A highly pressured area all around you, and it's hard to access. It's a thick area.
Yeah.
You're not going to see a lot of deer, but you're likely to see the deer. And yeah, that's the whole idea with a lot of the areas that you know, I guess there's been a common misconception that's been painted, you know, for years that you're going to see 20, 30 deer when you go to the Midwest and hunt. It's just not the reality, you know, but you may see the right deer.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going up there we're not fortunate enough to sit on a private piece that's got, you know, 300 or 400 acres around it that's unpressured. You know, and even on the private areas that I've hunted, I haven't seen that many deer, you know, mm-hmm. but you're going up there looking for that one deer that's going to step out.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know that I've ever seen more deer than I did in years past in some of these states, but I've never seen just an overabundance of deer in Illinois. I mean, it's usually been 3 or 4 at this time frame. You know, maybe an hour or two later, I'll see 3 or 4 more. Might see one here, might see one there. But I don't know. I guess people get a misconception watching hunting shows and stuff that you're going to be sitting on a soybean field and you're going to see 100 deer out there. It's just, yeah, there are places like that, but it ain't the places we're going. And,
yeah,
you know, that place that you were hunting was a place that I felt like there could be an absolute magnum using in that area. Yeah. And there was a great buck in there. And so go prepared a little bit better next time, buddy.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there were other deer in there because, you know, I hunted it on some bad winds.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right at last light when my thermals were dropping, I did hear deer right before I would get down. I'd hear them blowing back there in the thick stuff. So I'm like, God, did I, like, if they smelled me, they're not coming back. So
right,
it's going to have to be a different deer, you know, next sit. So there were deer in there, and I did find later some other good spots pushing in a little bit further, mm-hmm. that I could have hunted, but I just stuck it out in that spot since I'd seen that big deer.
I think you learned as much as you probably could have asked to have on that trip.
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing trip, and I got a little rattling action in on those bad weather days, which was a lot of fun. So,
Did you go through all your footage? You got some good footage of stuff.
I've got 3 close encounters that'll be good, and 2 of them were rattling. One is that big deer that I missed, and I did get drawn on a doe, and she stepped into the brush before I could shoot her. But it was a fun trip. I'll never forget.
Thank God. I told him that last day. I said, do not shoot a doe in there unless you can get her out by yourself.
I was fixing to shoot a little six pointer on the last day, I tell you.
You gonna try to go back
this year? No.
Yeah.
No, I can't. Yeah. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Mama done strapped him legs.
No, not this year.
Yeah. Hey, you can go in January. Don't close January 14th, and that'll be next year.
Yeah. January 14th, the end of season, so.
Don't put that thought in his head.
We're gonna try to get one closer to home.
Yeah,
we got a lot of time left here. You know, 6 weeks of season left in Georgia.
Oh no, it's about over.
If you've got private ground.
Oh no, it's almost over.
No.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
No, it ain't. Right, you got till the 15th, so you got a month.
Yeah. I've got a month.
Then extended archery.
It's only private ground. You got till the 31st of January.
Is it only private ground for that?
Yeah.
Even in the counties.
In those counties, those certain counties.
Well, it's a lot of counties.
Just the metro counties, ain't it, for extended archery? Metro counties?
Paulding,
Bartow, Cherokee, Gwinnett, Fulton, Forsyth.
Last year it was only like 4 counties, and this year it's more like 7.
Okay.
Well, last year Paulding and I think the year before last was when it was just a few, and then last year they started opening it up to us. I think last year may have even been the first year for Cherokee.
I think it was,
So, yeah,
but I'm glad you said that though, because it is private. I remember last year it was private.
Yeah.
So,
but if you don't have private ground to hunt, you got till the 15th.
I think my season will be over the 14th. Mm-hmm. Be the last day. I'll clean the bow and put it back in the gun case.
And then get out the turkey gun and start talking turkeys on the 16th. And
I think it's funny how on board with turkey he was last year, and he's giving you a hard time now.
I'm on board with turkey when it comes to turkey season. He's already ready to cast season to the wind.
We still got plenty of time. I got more tags to burn.
Well, you know, so Travis, one question I've got for you before we go over to Mr. Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like next year you're going to expand your horizons a little bit and try somewhere new?
If you guys invite me back.
Would you go by yourself, knowing what you know now?
Probably not.
I
would do it, but I'll have four kids, and probably not. It'll probably be one weekend, maybe 3 days, if it works out. But
you think it would be easier at home if you did go on maybe two or three small trips instead of one big long one?
Possibly. Yeah, I think those long stretches are hard on the family. And
it's hard on me.
Yeah,
anymore.
you get to missing your kids and.
Missing home, you know, in general. I mean, this time for Illinois, for me, 10 days was we were there from Friday. About Wednesday, I was like, I'm about done with this.
What Nick did, you know.
I did too. Yeah. That was the first time I ever done that.
You get a little break at home, get some good sleep, because 7 days in a row is hard.
Makes you take a break. Even though you come back and go to work, it still makes you take a break. You're not like
some of us
bound and determined. Mm-hmm. Some of us.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for going with us.
Yeah, I loved camp. That was my favorite part.
First season with, you know, Talk About It Outdoors, and I think you're coming into your own. You're learning a little bit about the nuances of everybody. Everybody's got a job. We're gonna title that. That's gonna be the title of this episode. Everybody's got a job.
True.
So,
Travis didn't grow up in a camping environment, did you? Like going out to guys' camp and
no
doing that stuff. Yeah, you didn't grow up.
My grandpa took me a few times, you know, when I was younger. But I told y'all in the first episode, but
yeah,
this is my first real camp experience.
Yeah,
well, you good, didn't we?
Deer camp experience.
Yeah,
it's different.
It is different.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, this is just you. Just gotta, like you said, everybody's got a job. You got to figure out what it is. You got to fit. You got to figure out where you fit at. You know, and everybody's got a place. And one thing that's always drove me crazy is going to camp with people that don't find a place. Mm-hmm. You know, by the end of the week, everybody's usually figured out. All right, for next year, you know, this is what I need to do. So, but you'll go multiple times, and I quit going with places with people like that. I mean, I did. I wouldn't invite them to go back. I didn't want anything to do with them because. They were people tagging along. They weren't part of camp. They weren't making themselves part of everything and
providing value.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's the value side of it to me is nobody wants to do all the work, but if everybody chips in on doing everything, you learn your place, you know? So I think that's what I've always enjoyed about the group that we've went with. And it's always everybody, me and Cody, especially when we first started going, we knew, hey, we got to do this because we hunted together for so long. But doing the things, the little things, so picking up this, throwing that, doing this, doing that. I mean, because one person can ruin a whole lot of camp. I mean, it's like, this son of a bitch left this laying out here. He did this or he did that. And it's like, I better not do that, you know. And this, I mean, that's just what's fun about camp. I mean, so.
Thanks for cooking all those great meals.
Hey, that was a team effort this year. I mean, hell, Josh and Tyler was cutting up taters, and I mean, we was heating up this or, you know, doing that. I mean, and that's, but that's what's fun about planning it. You don't have, mm-hmm. I don't think we had a meal that wasn't ready at, you know, the right time any night. I mean, we had the meals pretty much ready every night this year.
Well, and your preparation beforehand, before we went up,
was
the key to that. Cause like if you got to go drag a deer out or whatever, dinner's still ready.
That's right. So. Yeah.
Tell you what though, them beans caused an emergency 40 foot up in that tree.
He said, I'd never come out of that top of that tree so fast in my life.
I rappelled down that thing so fast.
Oh, he had his gree-gree firing on all cylinders.
I love those pinto beans, but I don't think they're meant for deer camp until maybe the last day because, whew. Well, and it seems like everybody always does them early on. We do them at our camp early on, and it that's turns into a disaster.
That's my favorite meal of the whole week, some pinto beans and cornbread.
Are you still using that poopery for your hairspray?
That was terrible. I've told that story so many times. No, it's in the guest bathroom up there if you need some for your beard.
So let's get on the second half of Illinois. What are you looking at?
I was just making sure we're still recording.
Yeah, let's get on the second half because, you know, we didn't even – I think Josh kind of blindsided us last – was it last weekend in Texas?
No idea he was going.
No, he
I
mean, just
– I told you guys I'd be going at some
well,
point.
Yeah, you did. You did say you were going at some point, but
– we just get a random –
I was in Iowa, so or we would have probably been talking already.
Well, what's funny is you sent that picture of the Illinois border, and I was like, wait a minute. He told me he was not going back to Illinois.
Yeah.
And it didn't trigger in my mind that he was going to Iowa.
Yeah.
Drove right by everybody's exit. Yeah.
Well, then you send us one, what, Friday morning?
Friday morning.
You sent one at like 7 a.m. I'm like, what time did you leave? Yeah.
So my alarm went off at 3, and I was in the truck by 3:20. I was packed and ready to go.
It just you went by yourself?
Yeah, well, you know.
Oh, yeah, your buddy lives
there. My buddy DJ lives there. And so when I go up by myself, I can go stay with DJ. And so I have a roof over my head and don't have to sleep in the truck or anything crazy like that.
So did you already make plans to go back to the same place that you had hunted prior this year?
So before I went up, I thought every day for a week about where I would want to set up. And historically in the past, I will, like, if he can hunt, I'll go hunt with him at his grandma's place. But he wasn't available to hunt for some of the time. And so I just made up my mind, and I knew I wanted to hunt based on what time of year it was. I knew I wanted to hunt food. Mm-hmm. And so I picked out a spot that I knew was standing corn when I was there last, and that was cut corn at this point. And so it was directly across the road from one of the spots that I hunted when I was up there November. And so that's where I kind of decided I wanted to set up. I picked one that I knew I would have a good wind for, already picked out kind of where I wanted to go. And then when I actually got over there looking at it, finding a tree was a little more difficult than I expected it to be. But
always.
But I was able to make it work the first Friday evening. I got up there around 10 o'clock on Friday morning and actually kind of got to DJ's house about 9 or 10 o'clock. And then I didn't actually go out to hunt until about 1. And I was probably in my stand by 1:30 or so.
How long had you already planned this Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, so my intention was to hunt Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and then come back Monday evening.
Okay.
So knowing that if I was successful before then, I would just come back early.
Yeah.
So Friday night, I got in the stand, and I kind of saw exactly what I wanted to see. I saw, really, it was 5 deer that I saw one of them twice. Like he came out, it was a little spike. He came out and grazed for a little bit on the corn, and then went off into this creek bed across the cornfield, and he had disappeared for about 20 or 30 minutes, and then he ended up coming right back out.
Gotcha.
I saw some does, and then I saw a little kind of a medium-sized, I guess, 2-year-old. I mean, it was a decent 2-year-old just outside his ears, you know. He and that spike kind of, they hung out, and I don't want to say they squared off, but they were kind of like, you could
get out of my area.
Not even that. It was kind of just like, almost more like sparring. They were very gentle about it. It was pretty cool. I actually got pretty good footage of those 2 deer. They were at about 180 yards. And so got done hunting on Friday night, and Saturday it rained in the morning, and it basically rained from, I don't know, like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning until about 10. So at about 10 o'clock is when I got in the truck and I drove back over. It was about a 40-minute ride from DJ's place back over to where I was hunting.
Okay.
So I actually got in the stand pretty early. I was the wind had shifted, and so I was on the opposite side of that same field that I was on, but I was a little bit further back away from the road. The way that it laid out, it's kind of like a lima bean, or, you know, like a kidney-shaped pool.
Yeah.
So there's a section where the tree line actually comes out, and it provides a little bit of, I wouldn't say cover, but it blocks the road from being able to see all the way back into the back of that field. And I felt like that would be a spot where they would feel a little more comfortable because they wouldn't be as out in the open. So that's where I went. I went a little bit further back on the other side of that bend. And I set up in a tree that I was in a spot where there was a limb from a different tree directly over my head that I had to duck under to look on this side and then duck back under to look on that side. But I had a lot of back cover. It was probably the best setup that I've had sitting up there. So I sat there and I didn't see a deer all day. And I was, like I said, I was there early. So it was kind of a long sit. I was there. Sun went down at 4:34 and I pretty much lost camera light right 20 minutes after that. And so I started packing my cameras up. I had everything loaded up in my bag waiting on that last light. And I was getting ready to pick my bag up off the hook and put it on my back so I could climb back down. And as I started to lift it up, I looked to my left and had a buck coming out of the wood line at 52 yards where he came out from right where I was sitting the day before. And so he came out and he walked directly at me. And I could tell by the size of his body, it was a buck. There was no doubt in my mind. And I could see his horns. I just couldn't see really what they looked like. I mean, it was dark enough and I'm old enough that my eyes aren't as great as they once were. And when I saw his body, I immediately thought, I'm going to shoot that deer. And he walked directly at me, and I couldn't see the digits in my rangefinder at this point. So I kind of guessed. I guessed he was about 35 yards, and he probably was when I originally guessed. And so I turned the dial to 35, and he kind of kept coming a little bit. And so I went to full draw on him, and he stopped. I didn't have to stop him. He stopped, and I let it sail, and it went straight over the top of his back. And I thought, come on. Like, it was, I felt good about the fact that I completely missed him.
Yeah.
He turned and he ran 10 yards and he stopped. He looked back and he was like, okay, there's nothing there. He turned around and walked right back where he was walking from. And so as he turned around, I knocked another arrow. And at this point, he's really at about 35 yards. And so I went to full draw again and he saw me. And he looked at me, and I could see he was getting ready to go. And so he started to take another step, and I stopped him, and I let it sail, and I smoked him. So I really wasn't sure that I hit him because the lighted knock on the second arrow didn't work.
Dang it.
So I didn't have it on film because all my camera gear was already up, and I don't think you would have been able to see it anyways.
Yeah.
But at my initial thought was, I think I shot under him. But I heard it, you know, like it was one of those things where subconsciously I knew I heard it hit him. I just didn't know how good I hit him. I thought I hit him low, kind of like I hit that deer last year. And I was like, man, I really hope I didn't do that again. And so I gave it a little bit of time, and I was texting DJ, and my adrenaline was up so much, and I'm trying to type on my phone and my hands are shaking. Like, I was jacked for sure, but I gave him a little bit of time, and then I climbed down to
Hold on, I don't mean to stop you, but yeah. I want you to tell something about the miss and then the second shot.
Oh yeah.
And
so that is the exact reason why I went back to my compound bow this year. Because last year I felt like I could have gotten a second shot if I wasn't using a crossbow. Mm-hmm. Because in order to get the crossbow recocked and then get a bolt loaded into it, get it back up on your shoulder and then get a shot, I mean, he's not going to stick around for you to be able to do all that.
Yeah.
for this particular scenario, he ran 10 yards. I picked up another arrow. I put it, I knocked it, and I was ready to go.
Yeah.
And it's exactly why I went back.
You keep your quiver on your bow?
No, I hang it.
Yeah, I do too.
So it hangs on the right side of the tree. My bow hangs on the left side of the tree.
I just wanted you to tell that. Why? Yeah. Why? Because, you know, we didn't really talk much on last year because, of course, you were hunting with us, but you weren't really part of the podcast and everything then.
Right.
But I wanted you to kind of tell everyone why you had went back to a compound. And it wasn't the only reason you went back to a compound, but that played a big deciding factor in you saying, I'm going back to a damn compound over this crossbow.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people get the misconception that there's this huge, you know, just deciding difference in success with a compound and a crossbow. And in certain instances, it does play into the effect of, yes, being more effective. But in that sense, if you have a mishap where you miss a deer, doesn't do you a bit of good. I mean, you know, you've missed, you're probably done. You can't reload like you can with a bow.
Right.
So, and sorry, I didn't mean to stop you, but I wanted you to tell that.
I mean, that's a really good point. And there's really, really great aspects of both.
Mm-hmm.
And there's drawbacks to both.
That's right.
And I think for me, the great aspects of the compound outweigh the great aspects of using a crossbow. So anyways, so I end up climbing down. I knew where my first arrow was because the light did not work fine on that one. So I got down and I walked over to my initial shot area. I was going to have to walk past where my shot was to go back to the truck anyways. And he had cleared the field. I mean, I didn't hear him crash for sure. But I knew he made it a decent ways into the woods. And so I grabbed the first arrow and I started looking for the second. And couldn't find the arrow anywhere, but after a couple of minutes, I found pretty good blood.
Really good blood.
And so I took a picture of it and sent it to the group, and I was like, and I ended up calling Alex.
Yeah.
Because I was going to ask him, hey, what do you think about that blood?
And yeah, he didn't hear it crash or nothing, though, did you?
No. And so I was like, I don't, some of those pieces that I've been hunting up there on public land are small enough that if you jump one, he's going over the border, even if he doesn't go that far, you know? And so I wanted to be extra cautious about going in there to try to track him. And so as I'm looking, I mean, the first bit of blood was good. The second bit of blood was just as good. I mean, it just kept going. And so I hit my buddy DJ up, who had ended up going out to hunt at his grandparents' place later on in the day. And I was like, hey, can you come give me a hand? I'm going to try to track this deer. And I went back to the truck and I waited on him. It was like a 40-minute ride for him. So by the time he got there, I felt a lot more comfortable about, especially with the amount of blood I saw. And so he eventually gets there and we go to track this deer. And I had already marked first blood on my map. So we went right to it. And I was like, if he's bleeding this much by the time, he was 30 yards into the field from the tree line, and it was big piles of blood all like every 5 or 10 feet. So we get to the tree line and I start following that through, and it goes down a creek bank and then back up and then comes across the top of this. It's a little flat hill, and then it goes down a ravine like 7-8 feet. And then from the top of this ravine, I can see him. He's on the other side at the top of the other side of this. It's basically like an 8-foot bank, and it's
straight up.
I mean, it's pretty straight up. It's about 75 degrees straight up.
Oh, wow.
I don't know that joker didn't just clear that first.
He may have jumped it clear across. I don't know. Because it wasn't that wide.
Yeah.
So the thing that I hadn't thought about was I never found my arrow. So I go down and DJ was nice enough to hold the GoPro and try to film the recovery for me. I have no idea what it looks like because I still haven't looked at that footage. And so I'm climbing up the other side of this bank. And as I get ready to hoist myself up, I put my hands up and I raise my left knee to put my left knee on top of the bank so I can climb onto the flat ground. And when I do that, I feel
sharp pain in my hand. And I was like, what was that? And I looked down, and just in my headlamp, the lighted knock is like turned on, but just barely. Like, it's almost like the battery's almost dead. So I was like, there's my arrow. I was like, wait a minute. I just put that arrow through my hand.
No kidding.
So the way it was, it's the way I kind of try to explain it to somebody that can't see. If you took a steak knife and laid it on your counter and left the handle kind of hanging over the edge of the counter, that's kind of how it was. And I put my hand in front of it, and my knee pushed the broadhead.
Oh, no.
Right through
my
middle finger.
Had you seen that yet, Nick?
No.
And when I say, I don't know what it, like I say, this may be on camera. I don't know what it looks like because I haven't looked at it yet. But I told DJ, he's still standing at the bottom of that ravine. And I was like, dude, I just cut myself pretty bad. He was like, really? I was like, yeah, apparently I found my broadhead. And so by the time I had even seen it, my hand was already covered in blood. And it wasn't deer blood. So right. That really changed the whole aspect of the next, you know.
Several hours.
A couple hours of decision-making processes, because it hurt bad enough that I had a hard time using that hand. And it was bleeding bad enough that I knew I needed to render some sort of first aid to myself.
Right.
So what we ended up doing is I was wearing my orange vest. I tore the pocket off of it and I wrapped it up real tight. And we commenced to dragging this deer. Now, because my finger was cut, I didn't get the pictures that I wanted to get. I didn't gut it where it was laying like I normally would have, so it would have been a little bit lighter to drag.
Yeah.
And props to DJ, because anybody that would help me drag, I mean, this deer, he had to weigh close to 200 pounds.
Yeah.
He was a big body joker. I was amazed when I saw his horns. I was amazed they weren't bigger than they were, because I could see them, you know. Yeah. I mean, it was low light, but I could see that he had horns. And not that it was ground shrinkage or anything like that. I had no idea how big his rack was. I just felt like it would have been bigger based on the size of his body.
Right.
I mean, his body is what convinced me that he was a dead deer. So we got to drag this deer. I've got to do it one-handed. We got to drag him down an 8-foot bank and then back up another 8-foot bank through that creek bed and out onto this cornfield, and then 400 yards across this cornfield.
You didn't have a game card either.
We did not have
Why a game card. Why in the world you didn't come get that game card from me, I'll never know.
Well,
I just
hindsight is 20/20, buddy. But I can guarantee you this.
You'll have it next
time.
I'm
going to have a game card the next time I go out there, especially if it's just going to be me and a buddy, or
right.
Even if it's not, me,
you've been packing
myself.
It out.
What's that?
If not, you would have been packing it out.
Oh,
if you
yeah.
didn't have DJ.
Oh, yeah. If DJ hadn't have been there, I would have had to quarter that deer up where it laid.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
DJ's a big old boy. He's solid. He's 6'6", 6'1".
He's about 5'11", 6', and I mean, he's
260.
Yeah. Well, I think he's probably more like 235, but he's solid.
Yeah.
Sorry, DJ.
But we're not weaklings, you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, we're both relatively strong.
But you're not young either.
No. What was amazing to me is, and DJ might get mad at me for this, but he got so gassed dragging that deer.
Dude, you don't understand how much it takes.
Dead weight's a lot.
I know. But anyway, so I made the decision at the time not to gut that deer where it laid. Mm-hmm. So we dragged that heavy joker all the way back over to the truck. And I was like, dude, I'm going to have to take it to a processor. I can't do it one-handed.
Right.
And I didn't feel comfortable putting my hand in the deer with my open wound.
Right.
And so we get it all the way back to the truck and we start looking up processors, and all of them are saying they're closed. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, I'm going to have to gut this deer now, because I can't drop it off of a processor if it's not right. at least gutted. So I commenced to gutting the deer one-handed. DJ providing some assistance by holding leg and doing that, whatever. But so I get it gutted, and then we take it off to the processor, and I get there, and they're freaking open.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, well, oh well, it is what it is. So, but it was a great time.
They processed the deer and gave it back to you before you came home
Monday? No, they still have it. I'm going to go back up there and get it.
So the lady that was at the processor too had worked on an ambulance, and Josh is like, do you think I need stitches?
Oh yeah. So I was getting ready to ask her, is there urgent care or somewhere like that around here? And before I said that, I was like, you know what? Are you squeamish? And she goes, no, I used to work on an ambulance. I was like, oh, perfect. Look at this. So I showed her my hand and I was like, do you think that needs stitches? And she was like, well, I mean, yeah, you could go get some stitches, but you're probably just as good to super glue it.
Okay.
And so she was like, really, you just need to get it. You need to get somebody to squeeze it shut and then super glue it. And I was like, that sounds like it would not be fun. So we got back over to DJ's and I started performing the first aid on my finger. And I, in retrospect, I probably should have either super glued it or gotten some stitches because it's still pretty wide and there's going to be a pretty significant scar there.
Yeah.
But it actually looks way better now because I've done a pretty good job of keeping it clean. And
you're probably severely lucky that it actually happened on, for those that can't see it, it's on the pad. The first pad on Josh's finger. If you had gone down into that first knuckle, you could have cut your tendon there, and you could have really been in, you know, some deep trouble.
Well, what's funny is I know I've cut some nerves because I can't feel my fingertip.
Yeah. So, I can't feel any of mine. Yeah. I mean, well, neither. So, hey, we're buddies now.
I used a razor blade. You used exploding devices.
I found a broadhead out there. But
That's exactly what he said.
I found a broadhead the exact same way that Nick did. It just happened to be my own.
Yeah, it happened to be his own.
But
yeah.
What are the odds of the arrow coming out right there? My hand going right in the exact spot that it needed to. My knee hitting the back of that arrow. Like, it's like one in a trillion.
Yeah.
And like, I'll never forget it, without a doubt. But one of the things that I did think about, well, actually, Alex thought about in our conversation the next morning was adding first aid stuff to my bag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And specifically butterfly bandages, because when you have a gash like that, that's really what you need is a butterfly bandage so that you can cinch that wound up tight.
Yeah.
Because you're using knives, you're using broadheads, and those things are going to cut gashes in you, like,
right.
pretty nice lacerations, well, you know, like if you're going to ask for one.
That kind of thing would have happened, you know. I mean, well, I know, yeah, anything can happen, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I shot my finger, you know, all those years ago, shot a broadhead through the end of it, had my finger too high, and I mean, it, of course, it was nowhere near as long a cut as that, but something we had talked about was, you know, I don't carry any kind of first aid stuff, but it's definitely something that I think in the off season is going to come up. I've made a note of it in things that I've learned this year, and yeah. That's one of the things that I think, one of the things I've read on too, and since you and I had a conversation, was I thought maybe that wound stop or that, you know, the clot,
blood, yeah,
that stuff's not good for you. Yeah, no. not good at
that
all.
Is and emergency only.
Well, the guy said that it sometimes will make it worse because it'll cause clots and it clots up in places that you're in a direct vein.
Yeah.
It can get in your bloodstream and actually, you know, kill you.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's more like for battlefield care, you know, like.
But things that I want to, you know, that's something I'm definitely going to, in all the stuff that I carry with me, not even having, you know, a tourniquet, just any kind of, you know, just a small kit of some kind, butterfly bandages, gauze.
If you've got 550 cord, you've got a tourniquet, no problem. The bigger thing is, like, if you need a gauze, butterfly bandages, and some tape or something like that, so where you can apply pressure and stop bleeding.
It's funny though how quick somebody like ourselves can improvise. Like, you cut that orange vest, I cut my shirt off out west, and just go to tying stuff and fixing stuff in the right way. So
I think we should do that this summer, is have a little first aid session with the team, just so we're all prepared.
You never know.
I still have my my airman's manual that's got all my first aid stuff in it.
We're damaging our bodies and damaging our equipment this year over here. I'll talk about it outdoors.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we definitely learned how to not take care of ourselves, our stuff. We can definitely
looking back on my season, opening day, I got poison ivy so bad it swelled my eye shut. I did it again in Illinois.
Mine was bad in Illinois too. I'm just now getting over mine.
I cut my finger. I wounded a deer on opening day, along with getting the poison ivy. I mean, it's been
it's a battlefield out there,
dude. John. It's been a hard season.
Fell 6 feet. Like, I forgot about that.
You fell 6 feet.
Yeah, I fell 6 feet the first day. I forgot about that. Told Alex.
His Grigory fell apart on him or failed him.
Yep. Golly, we've had some close
calls. He doesn't use a Kong. He uses a Grigory.
That's the thing. That's the latch.
It's a Grigory. That's how he described it. I don't know why.
It's the latch thing, right? That you.
Yeah, it's like a Mad Rock safeguard.
Yeah.
That's what Travis did say. That. He's like, it's a Grigory.
Yeah, it's got a little handle in it. You got to do a little hand motion to get it to Grigory.
Caden thought that was the funniest thing he ever did.
So I overheard you a second ago. You said you're going to get that deer mounted. That's your first buck, or your first buck with a bow?
My first buck with a bow. First buck out of a saddle. First buck in Illinois. I mean, I first buck out of state. But on top of it, like, I think the bigger thing to me about it, I don't have a lot of pictures of him or anything like that, but I think the bigger thing for me is the accomplishment of doing it all by myself. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, now granted, the conservation area is what it is because that's where we were going. But that conservation area is what, like 10,000 acres?
Something like that.
I mean,
I think it's 14,000. It's broken up into a bunch of places.
Yeah, there's like 80 different spots, you know, 80 different parcels. Some of them really big, some of them pretty small. And I did the e-scouting myself. I did the preseason scouting myself. I did, you know, all of it was because of the work that I put in. Right. And not just this year, but last year, you know, and being able to make adjustments on the fly. And I think that's kind of the bigger significance to me is the amount of effort and work that I put in. You know, it could have been a spike. I mean, I probably wouldn't have shot it if it was a spike, but it could have been a spike, right. You know. And
wouldn't have mounted it if it had been a spike.
Well, I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, it's that significant to me.
That's good, though. All that bow needed was somebody else to shoot it, break it in.
Well,
Josh bought my old prime bow, and he's now killed two deer with it this year, and I had it for 2 years and couldn't kill nothing with it. So.
Both out of state, both in places, especially Missouri. I mean,
there's another one. I mean, it was hard. It was a lot harder than I really, you know, you think about it. And Alex touched on it a little bit when he started talking about the quantity of deer that you see. And you hear the stories about you go to the Midwest, and you're going to see deer like crazy, and I've had days where I've seen 10 or 12 deer in a sit, but they're few and far between. And if you're seeing 10 or 12 deer, they're often not the ones you want to shoot.
Yep.
So it's kind of like the, what are you going for? Are you going up there to try to hunt a trophy? Are you going up there to fill your freezer? Both of them are perfectly fine. Do whichever one makes you happy. Mm-hmm. But it's been a learning experience. I mean, this is my third year in Illinois. The first year I had no clue what I was doing, and I was hunting private ground, and we had trail camera pictures of good deer.
Mm-hmm.
Had no idea how to hunt them, you know, had no idea how to find them or to put ourselves in the best opportunity. I mean, all of my hunting prior to that was in basically stands where we said, go to stand two. Or go to stand four, go to whatever. Mm-hmm. All of them have names because they're in the same spot for the last 20 years. You know, I didn't know anything about trying to be mobile and put myself in the right spot. It's a very huge learning curve to try to figure out, especially when it was me and DJ and neither one of us knew crap. You know, and so taking the little bit of knowledge that I gained trying to do it that way on my own, and then given the amazing opportunity to go hunt in Illinois with Alex and Cody and Josh and Shad and Caden, Tyler, and now Travis and Caleb, and being able to learn from those people, I couldn't think of a better scenario, you know, and just getting, even if it's not like, hey, go here, it's more like, hey, this is what you should be doing, or just listening to what they're doing and trying to learn from. I'm just trying to be a sponge, you know what I mean? Right. And so taking the culmination of that, and like I said, I mean, he's no record breaking buck, but I mean, I'll never forget him. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you got the story of the whole first aid debacle and all that stuff. So,
well, and I think the biggest thing, like I said about Travis, if he ever figures out how to go and kill deer, learn deer hunting, he's got the drive to go it. I'll say the thing about you is you've got a drive about you, and you've always been that way. When you get something in your head, they ain't no telling you no different. And I think that's why, I mean, you always got along good. It's like, you'd be like, yeah, that's fine, we can do it that way. But Josh, he'd never say a bad word about it. He's not a negative person. If you get Josh mad, whew, it's, you've done something. I mean, I've never seen, you don't see him upset. I mean, he gets it's something in his mind, like, I'm going to do this. And he said the day we left Illinois, I will be back up here. And you went and did it yourself. I mean,
yeah. Well, and I think the bigger thing to me is, and I was texting back and forth with Nick, I think it was yesterday or day before. And this is something that I've discovered in the last 10 years.
Yeah. You know,
this is, I think, next year will be my 10th year hunting. And I sometimes it's almost depressing to think about all of the 20 or so years that I missed out on the opportunity to be able to do it, just not knowing that it was something that I would love so much. And every opportunity that I get to go, I want to go.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's a good day, bad day. If I can go sit in a tree and potentially see a deer, it's a good day.
What do you get into turkey hunting?
Josh. I've tried it. It's not my thing.
Josh, don't count it out yet.
Well, I haven't gone with don't you. Count, I haven't gone with you
that,
yet.
That great story and sentimental moment and everything. Boy, damn turkey, get you gobbler, son.
Don't count it out.
I haven't gone with you yet, so.
Just don't count it out.
Josh, well, is your military
just if he says experience? Get up and move, don't. Just sit where you're at. Just about, no, I believe we're to sit here.
He touched on your drive. Does your military experience help you with that discipline and mindset when things aren't going right?
I guess it helps me wake up early in the morning.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
a Joker likes to get up early.
I don't know about likes it. I just do it because that's what needs to be done. Yeah. But
I like it. I like it.
They were up at 3 a.m. watching dang videos.
I was learning. That's learning time. If I'm not physically out there in a tree, I've got to be learning about being in a tree.
Well, you know? I'll say this. You know, this is really the first season that you and Travis have been a part of Talk About It Outdoors. Y'all been friends. You and I, Josh, have been friends for a long time, and Travis has known Nick and I for a lot of years. But having y'all part of the team, it was never about when we started talking about, you know, adding people and doing more and expanding it. It was what does this person bring to the table? Now, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that there's way better deer hunters out there than I'll ever be. There's way better turkey hunters out there than well, maybe not Nick, but than I'll ever be. But there's something to be said about getting the right people in the right mindset. And like I said about camp, this is a camp. I mean, and if you put the wrong person in the mix with us, it's going to ruin the whole deal. And I honestly feel like that the team at Talk About It Outdoors, it was missing something without you two. I mean, and I mean that. I mean, y'all came in and y'all bring to the table maybe a different look on it. Travis has got this drive and energy to go and do crazy things that he's going to get some amazing footage and get some cool stuff. And you've got a very driven narrative that you can bring to the table. A different thought process on things. And, you know, we're running up on, you know, this is episode 198 that will drop out. And in 198 episodes, we never seem to fail to amaze. I mean, I sit here for every one of them, just like Nick has. And it never ceases to amaze me at what we can learn and what we can discover, not just about hunting, but about ourselves or about anybody else. You know, that's what's been very cool to see. And, you know, the next episode we cut is going to be 199, and then we're going to have 200. And you look back at 200 episodes, has the accomplishment been we've got to 200 episodes? Not for me. It's been that we've been able to learn 200 individual hour, 2 hour long conversations and stories and make those opportunities and stories that, I don't know. It's been cool. It's been great having you both here, and deer season ain't over yet. And we're going to have some fun for the rest of the season. And we got a lot of stuff to talk about and a lot of stuff to do. So
yeah.
What's your thought of the night, Nick, on this episode?
I got a couple questions. How about that?
Okay.
A couple questions. But I did hear this thing the other day, kind of ties back into what you kind of just said, but I heard this, I wrote this down from, and I don't know if it's his line or somebody else's quote from whenever, but Jace Robertson brought this up on their podcast the other day, and he said, you know, the older he's gotten, and I need to do this, I'm speaking to myself, but focus on the adventure, not the success. And I have a hard time with that sometimes, because it's like when I go to do things, like I want instant, you know, I want things to happen right then and there, and I don't like just slow down and just enjoy it. And there was actually a preacher talking about this on Sunday as I was driving back from South Georgia, and I was thinking about me and Alex in this situation, but the guy said there's two different types of people in the world, the people that want to hurry up and get there, or the people that want to stop everywhere and see something. And sometimes, like, I think there's probably a happy medium. I'm not going to stop at every rest station and every Bucky's I see to get something, but sometimes I do need to feel like I need to slow down. And I don't know. I don't know why I felt like sharing that, but I thought it was a good that I think we all need to focus on this, you know, the adventure, not the success, because we all want to go kill a deer.
Yeah.
But what we can take out of it with our friends on these trips and stuff like that is we'll cherish more than that, you know, as much as we always say mount the memories and the memories on the wall, at the end of the day, it's just a deer, or it's just a turkey, or it's just a bird, whatever you're chasing, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. The time that you're spending with your family is means more.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there. And I think all of us have to tell ourselves that. I caught myself telling myself that in the tree all week long, mm-hmm. that first visit up to Illinois this year, like, hey, you may not be seeing the deer that you want to see or seeing deer at all, but man, we've had such a good time.
Yeah.
I mean, and I cherish the opportunity to be able to come up here and spend time with all the guys at camp. I love being able to come in here and sit and listen to the podcast, whether it be our guests or just episodes like this where it's just us talking. It is how I would choose to spend every day that I had an opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
And I think keeping that in the forefront of your mind on why we do this and the fellowship of it, the camaraderie, and then the successes and the failures and the learning lessons and all that stuff as well. But I think the bigger thing is specifically for me, the opportunity to learn the craft that I want to be good at,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
From guys that have been doing it a lot longer than I have, that have a lot more knowledge than me. And, you know, hopefully, you know, Alex said there's a lot of guys out there that are a lot better hunters than he'll ever be. I want to try to close that gap for myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you this, if I'm ever better than everybody else, then deer in this world are safe.
You know, it's kind of going back to last episode, what Cody was talking about is like once, you know, and you hear a lot of these guys that chase deer, like once they kill it, it's over. Like,
yeah.
Like it's yep. it's over for them, you know, like.
Well, so, that's one good thing about Georgia is you can do it twice.
Yeah, you can. Well, you can close that door on it, but it's, you know, it still sucks. So I don't know. I just felt like sharing that with y'all. I think this episode is going to be out right before Christmas, and I wrote this down here. What would be like a, and this might be a helpful for someone, but like what would be a Christmas gift that you think, you know, somebody hunting, maybe somebody that listens to this podcast is looking to buy something for their husband or for their kids. What do you think a good gift would be?
Yeah, this episode will drop the week before Christmas. So
okay.
You're right. This will be the 19th.
Yeah. What do you guys think?
Ooh.
I mean, like if you were, you know, I mean, just, I guess kind of put yourself in your shoes. There probably ain't many women listen to this, but there may be some somebody looking to get their, you know, somebody something.
I'm you got something?
Wait, I've got plenty of things, but yeah.
Well, I'm going to go off the beaten path with this a little bit, because it goes back to something that I had a conversation with, you know, I talked about Gary up there in Iowa, and Gary had a shotgun that was he had had for years and years, he hunted with, and I told him, I said, Gary, if you ever get rid of that shotgun, I'd like to have it. And, you know, we'd been hunting together now for 7-8 years and thought a lot of him, seen him carry that gun around, got to shoot it a time or two. And I told him, I said, if you ever get rid of that, you know, I'd like to have it. And he told me, he said, well, I'm going to give it to my grandson. Understood 100%. You know, I was like, hey, that's great. I said, there's got to be something that you have, though, that you know, you can, I said, I want you to give me something. I said, I don't, that might sound weird. I said, but I don't need it to be, I don't want it to be something.
A memento.
I said, I want something I can carry in my bag with me. I've got a few things in my bags, you know, my first knife, dad got me, things like that. And, but I carry stuff like that. And I'm like, cause when I open that bag, I may not always pull it out, but every once in a while I'll get something in my bag and I'll say, dang, that's old so-and-so. But he's sending it to me, and he forgot to bring it, but he was going to, but you probably know what this is. It's his knocker. Do you know what a knocker is? So in the military, I guess back in the old days, they had a coin that they carried, and you walked into a bar.
Challenge coin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They called them knockers. Yeah. He was in the Navy. But you walk into the bar, and if somebody pulls it out and they hit the bar with it, everybody else in the bar has to pull theirs out and hit on the bar. And if somebody doesn't have theirs, they have to buy a round for the whole bar.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
And so Gary is sending me his knocker that he had. He was in the Navy for 28 years.
Don't forget, and, if you challenge someone with your coin and everybody's got theirs, you got to buy them.
Really? Round. So that, I didn't know that part. But there's just things like that. So if you want to get your significant other, or, you know, your dad, or, you know, a cousin, or whoever you're buying a gift for, get them something that makes them think of you. You know, it doesn't have to be a knife or whatever it is, but make it special. You know, make it like, if you're into something, or you're into maybe if a kid's into cards or something, or maybe get them a cool Pokemon card or something. I don't know, to give to your dad. Say, I want you to put it in this in your hunting bag. And for me, that kind of stuff like that, I mean, Nick calls it my Sotheby's funeral home case, but I've got stuff over there in that case that stuff means more to me than anything, you know, I've got.
That
I mean,
you
those
buy from the store or whatever.
Yeah. So get them something. It doesn't have to be, just think about something that, yeah, they may enjoy it, but that would make them think of you. And that's, for me, that's the one thing, if I could say this Christmas, do that. So was that the answer you was expecting?
You probably should have gone last.
Josh is like, well, you need that. You got that now, sack, that toilet paper thing.
I mean, what I'd say is, I mean, it depends on who you're buying for. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I mean, if it's somebody that you're going to go out and you're going to spend, you know, 30, 40, 50 bucks on somebody, camo's always good. You never have enough. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one thing I'm always trying to get more of.
Those alpaca wool socks.
Some alpaca wool socks. Some
use code TAI10 if you order those. You get you a discount on them.
Them jokers are legit for sure. If you start talking about, you know, for somebody that's needing new gear of some sort, you know, depending on what your price range is. I mean, if they need a new rangefinder or whatever. Little things like that you can.
If you buy a rangefinder, get one with an illuminated reticle, because you were talking about that. That's exactly why I switched to the Hawk one that I've got. It's orange in there. You can see it in low light condition. So
I'm always making notes and planning on upgrading stuff for sure. So
just so you know, too, Josh, and you probably already know this, but if it is low light, because mine's the same way, I don't mine's not lit up in there.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot it a couple times and then point it up in the sky.
Yeah,
to the light, and then you can see, because it'll hold its thing.
Yeah.
So I usually click it a couple times just to make sure, and I'll hold it up in the skylight, and I'll go back down and hit it a couple times and make sure it's accurate.
Well, luckily it didn't matter this time.
Yeah.
But that is a good idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like little gear things, but then also, like Alex said, something that will make them think of you is
yeah.
I mean, that's excellent. So that's probably it for me. What about you, Travis? More Grigories?
On the gift thing, I'm not a gift person. I always like to just spend time with people and
with my family and everything. I'm like, no, don't. Like, if I want something, I'll go buy it for myself. And I'm not, like, my brother's getting into hunting, so I'll get him some arrows or something for this Christmas. And he's getting back into shooting after hearing my Illinois story. So,
yeah.
Another hunt, buddy.
Yeah. I think he just likes beating me. So we were up at the cabin shooting, you know.
I can't think of anything better.
we were dialing my bow in, and that's when I told you I missed all those shots. And he got into shooting. He was shooting tight groups, and he never shoots. I don't know if it's beginner's luck, but he was like, I think I want that old bow of mine back. And so I'm going to go get him some new arrows and there stuff. And he's already bought him a new target. So I'll get him that. And on your first thought about, you know, enjoying the process, man. Yeah. That's what the whole trip was about for me in Illinois. And it just, all that time away, you miss your family, and all that time in the tree and seeing those beautiful sunrises, it just makes you think, like, how happy you are to be there.
Yeah.
And seeing what God created and thinking about your family and, it, you know, trying not to be on your phone and just soaking it in is what you, that made me think about when you said that, and, you know, being a better husband and father are the things that I was thinking about when I was in the stand. And I think that's probably more important than killing a deer for me is, you know, those moments do come, but, you know, when you're bored, you're thinking about life and where you want to go.
You got a lot to think about sitting there in the saddle, or
especially all day sits.
Yeah, you got a lot.
You aren't seeing any deer.
Yeah, for sure.
Another thing that I thought about and kind of goes off of what Travis is saying is one of the things we've started asking our kids is, what's an experience that you would like to have? You know, like my youngest, when we were doing letters to Santa, she's not quite writing yet. So I was writing her letter to Santa for her, and I was like, well, what's something you want to do? She said, I want to go to the aquarium. I want to go to the zoo. So in the line of that, like if you're looking for something for your significant other or whatever, an experience that they would be interested in doing would be great. Like, you know, tell my wife, yeah, $10,000 hunt out west would be great. Right. Yeah. But I mean, in all seriousness, you know, enough money to buy tags in another state.
Right.
Something like that would be really cool. Or an experience to go do together. You know, maybe you haven't started hunting yet and your significant other does hunt and you want to experience that with them. Hey, we're going to go hunt this day or whatever. And just like he said, spend that time together. And who knows, you may find, like me, it's the greatest thing you ever learned how to do.
Yeah.
I do think turkey hunting is a little more fast paced if you want to get your spouse into it.
Wah, wah.
That's the only one I've got mine to go with me on. So she fell asleep doing it, but
well, at least she didn't move around a lot.
What about you? What's Christmas, the thing you would say to
Christmas?
To buy somebody?
Christmas gifts. Again, I think it ranges from all types of things. You know, I think probably for a young person, probably, you know, you can get them something like a trail camera. They're pretty inexpensive nowadays, and kids love looking at those things. Probably some of the easiest things to buy. Of course, you go over there to the Talk About It website and get you some stuff, get you some mouth calls, get you some hats, shirts,
get you some merchandise.
Yeah, if you want to splurge a little bit, you can ease up there to cruisersaddle.com and get you a saddle. But now, I mean, I just think little, you know, small things. I mean,
go to Cherokee Feed, get you a couple sacks feed.
You know, I was at Walmart yesterday, and this might sound like a big gift, but it's got a small price tag on it. I seen a 20 gauge for $119. Yeah. I mean, you can go get a single shot 20 gauge, and that kid will have that for the rest of his life. You know what I mean? Just to shoot whatever targets, whatever. But I think something
Blue
like
Jays.
That. Yeah, I mean.
Don't need no Blue Jays. Some guns ain't worth a damn.
So something like that. But no, I think I was kind of, you know, I'm sure people always look for gifts, but I'm like Travis. Like, I was walking around Walmart the other day, and I'm like, man, I just can't stand. Like, I shouldn't say that. Like, it's hard for me to shop for people, like, because I feel like people, like most of my family, they just buy what they want to anyways. Yeah. I don't have kids, so it's hard, you know.
Well, when you're an adult and you want something,
you
go get it.
Yeah, you just get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it comes down, you know, like, people buy you stuff sometimes and it doesn't, like, you're like,
you didn't
just save your money. Yeah. Just save your money, you know? So,
this is not something I'm going to use.
Yeah, you got to kind of walk that. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, this is part of being an adult, you know? And I think the bigger thing to think about as the recipient of a gift like that is to think about how difficult it was to pick out what they were going to buy, because they probably thought about it a lot more than they needed to.
Right.
And then they picked out something that, yeah, maybe you're not going to use it, but they thought you would.
Yeah.
And they were thinking about you.
My dad, it does not matter what he gets. He loves opening gifts. Yeah. I don't care what. My dad could buy anything he wanted, anything. And when he wants to have a pile of presents there. You could wrap a freaking rock, I swear. And you ain't even got to paint it. Just go out here in the driveway, pick you up some 57 rock, throw it in the box. And he would open it and say, wow, rock! I mean, he's genuinely excited to open. That's just who he is.
Yeah.
And he's always been that way. My brother bought him a damn Himalayan salt lamp. And he's like, it's so you can sleep good. Dad plugged it up there next to him. He's like, well, I'm ready to take a nap. And just like there next to him. But he was like, what in the hell am I going to do with this? But he opened it. I mean, he just like genuinely likes opening stuff. Yeah. I mean.
And there's that, like, I'm a gifts person. I do like gifts a lot. My wife knows that. So.
Yeah.
She's much better at the whole picking out and giving gifts than I am. I spend way more time thinking about, man, is this going to be worth it to, like, will she be interested in it? Or like,
the last gift that I bought, because me and Jessica don't buy each other gifts. If we want something, you know, she's like, hey, I want a new pair of shoes. I'm going to wrap this or whatever. Or I'll say, hey, I want a new coyote call. I'm buying this. Or I want some blue jeans. I'm buying it. That's just the way we are. Yeah. The last gift I bought her was a turquoise bracelet. I saw this bracelet and I thought, wow, she'll love this. And she's like, how much do you spend on this? And I was like, I don't know. I just thought you might. She's like, can you take it back? And I was like, yeah, I guess I can. And I mean,
that's a kick.
Y'all want a tip? Go, if they got a Pinterest account, go and see what's on their Pinterest.
My wife ain't got no. My wife, I told
her. Pinterest account is hand lettering stuff. It's like pens and.
Yeah.
She does a lot of like.
Well, I am going. Well, which the anything to do with outside like gardening or whatever, but I've already drawn out the plans, and that's what Jessica's getting for Christmas is a greenhouse. Mm. She wants a greenhouse, and I'm going to build her a full fledged greenhouse. I need some help building trusses, by the way. I don't know how to do that. I can only build roofs on a slope. Mm. I'm really good at building sloped roofs. I've never built one of trusses.
Just make like the half hoop. PVC.
I bought my cousins. I was actually, when I was walking around Walmart, I was my cousins, I think they're like 6 or 7. I wanted to buy them each a gift that was simple and easy, and I didn't know what to get them. I walked through the sports section and I walked through the hunting section and I bought them 2 flips.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to get, they're only $7 a piece. So I might get in trouble by their dads for that.
Well, you know, you talked about slingshots.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah.
You talked about buying stuff that means something or whatever. Like at Derek got Sawyer his first knife.
Okay.
And I've got it in my jewelry box, and I call it my jewelry box. It's got off. That's another cabinet. But anyway, okay.
That's where he keeps his gold chains.
Yeah. Yeah. You ain't a wrangling if you ain't a dangling. Got the chain jangalanging. Sorry, got a little carried away there. Got excited. I do want a new chain. Anyway. But he's got that, and I've got that knife, and it says Sawyer's first knife, and it's from Big D.
Okay.
I thought that was pretty cool. He got him that. I think he got him that for like his first birthday. So shout out to Big D.
I got one final question. I want to wish everybody a Merry, Merry Christmas before I ask this. It's going to be simple, a little sidebar, but what's your favorite coffee?
Maxwell House breakfast blend.
Favorite cup. I mean, it can be from a restaurant or anything.
Waffle House, if I'm going anywhere. Waffle House, my
Bingo.
Favorite.
Bingo. Yeah.
They make the best
coffee in the world.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Well, you don't have to. That's why it's an opinion. You can answer it.
Best cup of coffee is Waffle House.
I mean, pretty much my favorite coffee, if I'm just drinking coffee, is Colombian coffee. It doesn't really matter where it comes from, but QT, Colombian coffee, or wherever.
Yeah.
If I'm going to go get, you know, $12 coffee from Starbucks during the holiday season, they make a drink called caramel brulee latte. And it's like cocaine in a cup or heroin.
You ever seen that Kevin Hart where he's talking about his wife sent him down there to order a drink from Starbucks?
I haven't.
God, it's funny. You got to look it up.
How about you, Travis?
This Charleston coffee roasters from, you can go to Costco and get, it's pretty cheap and you get a giant bag. And I've had all sorts of coffee. It blows Starbucks and all that stuff away.
Okay.
I like just a good old cup of Maxwell House breakfast blend. I really
will say
like
that
it.
Coffee that we had in
that
in
Black
Illinois
Rifle
was amazing.
It is very, very good coffee. Very good. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. What is it? I don't know what,
I don't remember
which one it
they
is.
They all have crazy names. I don't know. Yeah.
Like, but that is very, if I was going to buy just bag coffee and I wanted to drink it, that would be very good coffee to drink.
It's like jet fuel.
What kind of coffee does Waffle House use? Do you know?
I'm
is that their
sure.
own
it's
special?
It's probably a breakfast blend of some sort.
It is a light. It is a light
like
coffee.
A light roast.
That's my favorite.
Light coffee or has more caffeine roast. Than dark roast.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the more they roast it, the more it loses the caffeine.
And darker, the more you roast it, the darker it gets.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be dang.
Mm-hmm.
Learn something every day.
How about that?
we went from. Chinese basketball teams to
you never know what we're talking about.
You know what? I will say one of the coffees that I really do like is from those Backwoods Grind guys they're at a lot of the outdoor shows and stuff. I've talked to them several times. They're great dudes. They have their own podcast too. It's okay.
Do you feel bad going back to what you said a second? Do you feel bad for pulling out $12 for a cup of coffee?
No,
like that don't like hit the wallet hard. Like you're like.
I don't know that it's actually $12 for okay. one, but for two,
Matt caramel no, frappa I mean, latte I, look, mochaccino
I've
bad
been
guy.
The times in my life where I couldn't afford to buy that cup of coffee, and I believe I've earned the right to buy that cup of coffee at this point.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
I have four daughters. I'll drink whatever the hell I want to drink. Most of the time, it's whiskey.
Oh, I mean, you got four too, Travis?
We'll have four in May.
Daughters?
Look at him.
All four will be daughters.
Let's do some math and make sure that
they'll be all
that conception date wasn't sometime in the beginning of November.
When was it?
Because he was out of town.
Oh, yeah.
No, it was before.
Oh, yeah. She found out.
Yeah.
It ain't the whiskey.
Yeah, we'll have to.
You're going
to
be needing that.
We'll
you're going to be needing that.
Child care up for next year.
Bless
for
your
Ohio.
Heart.
You're going to be needing some good coffee come May.
Well,
I mean, what's the difference between three and four?
One.
About another.
We'll have that 5-year-old raising that.
50 grand a year.
That young one.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
if like you got a barking dog, get your dog a bark collar, too.
That dog lets me know when somebody's out there that don't need to be.
Well, somebody must have been out there for the last hour.
Oh, he ain't been barking that much. You exaggerate so much just because your dog don't bark. It's in the house.
My dog's too fat and old to bark.
That's why you've been so quiet tonight. He ain't barking no more. Done got old on me.
Oh, man. Everybody have a good Christmas. And, hey, when you come back, we'll be talking about turkeys. I mean.
Mutin' you. Congratulations, Josh.
Thank you.
Travis, thanks for coming over tonight. We don't get to see you too awful much. You stay so busy. It's fixing to get really busy for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Going to be that time of year.
I want to make a lot more of these. I like spending time with you boys.
These are fun. These episodes like this are fun. Mm. And there's nothing that we ever talk about on here is really that important. But we do stress the fact that if you need something, please reach out. I mean, if you don't, you feel like you ain't got a friend, one of us will talk to you. You feel like you ain't got somebody to look, you know, that don't want to. You know, if you're feeling bad, I mean, you feel like you ain't got somebody you want to talk to, especially during the holiday season. I mean, there's a lot of guys out there that may be going through a hard time with family troubles or whatever. And if you don't, you know, feel like you got somebody to talk to, just holler at one of us, shoot us a message. I mean, because at the end of the day, this holiday season, I mean, that's what it's about, it's being there for each other. And I'm as blessed as anybody with the team of guys that we got around us here. But I've got a great family too. But you know, if I didn't have, I could reach out to any of these guys and we'd be there for each other. So, if you need something, just holler at us. And if there's,
if you're a family out there that might be in need of something, just holler at us. You know, if you got kids and you feel like you can't get them something for Christmas, give us a call. Because I promise you, there's somebody here. We'll get together and get them something. And right. And you can say it's from you. We don't even want any credit for it or anything else. You can meet us somewhere. If you need to meet at the Walmart in Canton or wherever you're at, if we can help you out, please reach out. Because I don't want to see no kid go without on my pawn, whatever I got to pawn. I got plenty of titles in there for junk.
I got about 100 fishing rods I could part with.
So just don't feel like you ain't got somebody that's looking out for you. We'll do whatever we can. So, like we said earlier, be much in thought of those that don't have anybody on the holidays and those are sick and afflicted or maybe going through something this holiday season. Be thinking about them and just be thankful for what you got because we sure are here. So for everyone here at Talk About It Outdoors, we want to remind you, smile as you go, but don't forget, mount the memories. Building the foundation of your life starts at the base, and the stronger it is, the better. Talk About It Outdoors is proud of our strong partnership with United Concrete and Paving and the foundation of support they provide. Whether your new home being built needs concrete work or that driveway you're tired of beating all the bearings from your pickup needs a paving, Michael and his team can provide any residential or commercial project support you might need from the ground up. If you're tired of tripping over that unsettled patio slab or a future shop build needs a smooth start, United Concrete and Paving can get you going when you need it most. Give them a call at 404-831-3036 and make sure you tell them them TAI boys are where you heard it first. A few years back, when an overbearing and overgrown backyard became an eyesore, I looked for a solution to resolve. LRS Land Services created a stunning and complete transformation turnkey at an affordable price with their mulching services. Not limited to mulching, LRS can provide turnkey grading and clearing, maintenance, right-of-way clearing, and even development for any and all forestry needs. With an innovative outlook on what is best for your land and a completely different approach than others, LRS can transform your overgrown eyesore into a beautiful landscape of your dreams. Give them a call at 404-889-1105 or check their work out on Facebook at LRS Land Services. Logan and his team are ready to make your land brand new again. Are you in need of a decluttering barn or garage slap full of stuff you just don't need? Or is your construction site needing a dumpster? Give our buddy Tony at Georgia Junk and Dumpster Rental a call. With services ranging from junk removal to roll-offs, Georgia Junk is here to help with any and all removal needs. If it's time to get that parking spot back or the boat needs a place inside, Tony and his team can surely assist. Servicing Cherokee, Cobb, Bartow, and surrounding counties, give them a call at 404-406-3501 or check them out on Facebook at Georgia Junk. Clean up the yard in short order with Georgia Junk.